is the Conrad Alert. Civil defense information will be broadcast at 640.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Y2K, how can we prepare?
Stop a few of their machines and radios. Throw them into darkness for a few hours.
We are fighting for our lives. My family must survive.
Over 5 years, 1,000 gallons of gas, air filtration, water filtration.
Coming at you from Delinquent's Gully Cabin, hunkered down off the grid in West Tennessee, streaming live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Rumble, and Odyssey. Welcome back to the workshop, where we create community, find freedom, promote preparedness, and share success. I am Toolman Tim. Today is April the 12th, 2024, and this is episode 442 of Workshop Radio. How is everyone else out there this evening? We are absolutely having a wonderful it's me. I'm all by myself in a cabin in the middle of the woods on Ruby Ridge. What? Did I say that out loud? No. Anyway, there's a whole story. But I'm on a ridge and they named our lane Ruby. So take that as you will. Good to see everybody in here this evening. Let's open up with a rule to live by. And this week we put her through the old randomizer and we got rule number 32. And that is, don't let the best get in the way of doing something good. And this is kind of my personal way of wording the toolbox fallacy. In other words, I can't do it because I don't. I really need top of the line microphone, camera. I need, 360 degree drone, the works before I can start podcasting. I promise it doesn't work that way. 110% every time. The people who have done great things in this life are the ones who started out sucking at it. In other words, they weren't great at it. They didn't have all their eggs in one basket. Pick your cliche, does not matter, but they were willing to start. And the cool thing is if you allow yourself to kind of suck just a little bit at first and do something good, it becomes great down the road. Or it becomes the best thing. But also, I've met folks over the years who have allowed the pursuit of better or best to basically take up all of their time, and it's a complete loss. So some folks end up spending every waking hour kind of obsessed over something that they're never going to be able to do, or they can't settle down with just good enough. And honestly, the people who do the most and the people who get the best stuff done, and hopefully something I've started to incorporate into my own life, is being able to settle for good or being able to do a good thing. And it doesn't have to be the best or striving for the better. Don't let that get in your way, folks. Simple as that. Rule number 32, do not let the best get in the way of doing something good. Or in the words of my good friend, Ryan Pippen, if at first you don't succeed, keep on sucking until you do succeed. Yes. I think that works for siphoning gasoline as well. So there you go. All right. So who we got in here this evening? Let's do a shout out to everybody we got. So far, I see Ryan Pippen. Good to see you. Mr. Digger, great to see you in here as well. Wired Edge Workshop. Love seeing you in here every so often. And Chris Dixon. Oh, and Byron Roberts. Good to see you. Chris Dixon says notifications were weird for this one. This is the first one that has gone off without a hitch for a little while. We did the one the other day, me and the girls, the say goodbye to the ladies. And I had all those troubles with Dickie Barrett there a week or so ago, and I had everything worked out. And it was a YouTube issue this time. At the exact hour that I was ready to go live, YouTube had kind of a live stream outage, and it spanned that little bit of time. It was a pain in the ass, but we got the show on the go either way. So it's good to see everybody. And like I said, I'm in the cabin enjoying life. I ran the roads today to get a whole bunch of stuff done, picked up some material. And just before I started, I actually figured I'd be quite a bit sweatier than I look on camera, but I just finished up framing in the floor for the next 8-foot by 8-foot cabin here. Addition to the main cabin. So there you go.
Nothing like eating under an open sky, even if it is radioactive.
Dropping the dime on precious metals.
So tonight we are going to take a look at, we're going to open up as always with our precious metals report, Dropping the Dime, which came from Byron Roberts. And so this week we've got gold bars and coins versus silver bars and coins. Which one is better for investors? This is one I went looking for because you get asked that all the time. And again, most of these articles, when they ask a question, the answer is going to be, say it with me, folks, it depends. But there you go. This one comes from CBS News. And thanks to inflation, high interest rates, and overall uncertainty, Americans have looked toward precious metals recently. These investments often provide low-risk way to both protect wealth and, in many cases, even grow it. Big box stores like Costco have begun selling gold and silver bars and coins. Here's the thing. It must be because I clicked on a Costco gold link, but my newsfeed has been full of Costco gold stories. I probably could have brought five or six different articles to you, but they said they are just absolutely having a hell of a time keeping their gold bars in stock at Costco. Not that I've been running out and buying all the gold bars, but somebody is. So there you go. Here we're going to kind of go over this a little bit. CBS says some individuals purchase silver as if it were a perfect substitute for gold, simply because they're both precious metals. And obviously, silver is cheaper than gold, which we know. However, there are differences in demand, liquidity, and performance under various market and economic conditions, what makes them similar, but quite imperfect as substitutes. And that was something I wanted to share. I know it was a bit of a mouthful for a quote there, but they're not wrong. And as we go along in this article, it's going to share just a little bit about why that is. But I'm personally a silver guy, love silver. Although Becky sent me a picture last night, she just got a 2.5 gram gold bar that she was saving up for without telling me, which is a huge surprise. I love that. So I love that she's on it too. But let's dive into the differences, because this is one of those things. And if you can only afford silver, get silver. If you don't have all your other preps in store first, then don't buy precious metals until you have the important things taken care of. So when gold bars and coins, so basically when gold is better for investors, and this comes at it again from kind of a monetary aspect, not so much a prepping or a be prepared kind of aspect, but generally speaking, gold would be a more suitable inflation hedge. Matt Miller, some guy with a bunch of words after his name. This is because gold is more scarce, yet retains high demand from both investors and governments around the world. So this is what I like. They're kind of diving in, and this really breaks down why gold is so much more expensive. Silver, which is much more available and used in many industrial ways, sees more ebbs and flows in demand and pricing. This also makes gold a lower risk investment. So if you're more conservative with your money, you may want to choose gold rather than silver. I want to throw in there, though, if you're looking at a long-term investment and you look at the long-term increase of both gold and silver, they've kind of followed the same pattern, staying, kind of ahead of inflation, that sort of thing. Prices for silver can be volatile, and in a severe depression, while gold is likely to rise in price, it's conceivable that the price of silver may actually fall as demand for the products and processes utilizing it decline. Now, here's the thing. I wanted to share this because I don't necessarily agree with it, but it is definitely a thought that I hadn't heard before from any other silver or gold guy. Basically, they're saying, in a worst case, well, in an economic depression, something like the Great Depression before, one thing that drops really quick is manufacturing. And what uses a lot of manufacture? What does manufacturing use a lot of? Silver. What don't they use a lot of? Gold. So in theory, they're going to say gold's going to keep chugging along, whereas silver is going to maybe actually drop in price. Now, most folks I know are keeping silver or gold for a much longer term process. Just a thought. But here's another one we've talked about before. If you're short on space or don't want to pay a lot for it, or don't want to pay for a lot of it, there you go. Gold can also be a better option. So again, we've talked about this in the past, but if you live in an apartment or you have very little storage space to handle things like that, then gold is a great option. Another thing that I hadn't thought of, but I'd seen people doing recently, is taking those little credit cards from the Swiss Mint or whatever the Swiss place is that hand out the cards, taking the little 1 gram gold bars and putting them in your wallet. Much easier to carry a couple of grams of gold than it is to carry 100 ounces of silver. You know, I'm digressing slightly. And then this one's kind of good. With burglaries and theft on the rise, your valuables need to be vaulted. Now, when they say vaulted, that could mean, I personally mean at home, but I think they're implying, put it on in a third party somewhere else. But here's a true statement of all of it. It's much easier to move $50,000 in gold to a safety deposit box versus silver. And this line right here I wanted to share. To put the weight into perspective, today's market, it takes almost 86 ounces of silver to equal 1 ounce of gold. So if mobility is your biggest thing, go with gold. Now, if you're looking for just kind of straight, chugging along, staying above inflation, holding on to your wealth, then probably gold. But again, most folks don't have $2,000 to go out and buy 1 ounce coin. And to be honest, it's not that much fun either. But if you're looking at having something long term, I'm still a big fan of silver. Silver's going to be my thing, I'm sure. And again, all the experts say, well, not all. There's some people out there, themselves experts, that say spend a lot more money on it than you should. But again, make sure all your other aspects are covered before you start investing in precious metals. And then ask yourself, why are you investing in precious metals? And if it's a hedge against inflation or in case, you know, the world collapses, great, okay. But know why you're doing it. Budget what you have and make sure you've taken care of all the other stuff first. Let's take a look back at the comments here, guys. I see a few. We got, so Byron and Chris both said the notifications were weird for this one. If either of you want to fill me in on that, you can do it on here or afterwards. I'd love to know just to see if something weird happened. Chris Dixon asked, what did I rent at Family Video? Well, guys, whenever I'm traveling the countryside, I love looking for old, abandoned, is architecture, maybe commercial real estate might be a better aspect of it. But one of my things I'm always looking for is old video rental stores. And this was the very first Family Video I'd ever seen in the wild. And if my research is correct, the last couple Family Videos shut down during the pandemic, but most of them shut down back during the Blockbuster days. So I parked the green Dodge workshop truck in front of it and snapped a few pictures. It was awesome. Dave, we got, oh, a new name or a bit of a new name. Anyway, maybe not. And Dave, if I've missed you in here before, I really appreciate, I apologize. David Hossfeld, good evening, Tim. Thanks for all the great content covering SRF. Anytime. And I have seen you in here before, David. Sorry about that. But yeah, I did my best to do it. I'll do one at Nicole's as well. People really seem to like the walk around kind of talk and show you what goes on at these events. Hopefully it gives people a bit of a feel for what goes on and maybe the desire to go again. But I like doing them a lot. And so I'm going to do more of those. And even when I get back north, I'm going to start doing more of these walk and talk live streams, a little similar to what John Willis does in the evening, just to kind of get the channel into the shorts feed as well. But I like doing them, and it's kind of a laid back way. Hatfield Homestead, good to see you. Oh, Rachel Brown in here this evening. She's out feeding the dogs, and then something about asshole chickens are still out. Chris Watkins, good to see you. And I'm always going to get this name wrong, but Carrot Lee, good evening. Nice meeting you and your family. Great meeting you as well. Always. Yeah, I met so many awesome people at SRF, and it's the highlight of my trip every single time without exaggeration. So I can't wait for the next one. And I know I've told everyone I'm not taking a road trip in the fall, and that is still 100% true. However, I am going to fly down for Self-Reliance Festival. That's it. Becky and I are coming down for about a 5-day window, maybe a 6-day window. We're going to do one or two work days at the property. Invite everybody from the workshop down who wants to, and then just have a hell of a time at SRF. And that's it. And then I'm flying home. So there you go, guys. Kind of exciting, but I had to stick to my guns and say that I was not going to end up taking another road trip. So
if anyone dies while you are kept in your fallout room, move the body to another room in the house.
The time has come for Stranger Than Fiction.
All right. So Stranger Than Fiction, for anybody who's new here, it's where we take a relatively brief look at the news. This section came from some episodes that Becky and I did way back when, and people really fell in love with them. And so I decided to keep following up with the news. Also, for anybody who wants to know, I am on Starlink, and once in a while I get kind of a bit of a drop in the signal. So I won't drop out. We should be good, but I just figured I'd let you know that these are the joys of live streaming from a cabin in the middle of the woods, in a holler, in a gully, whatever you want to call it. But it's absolutely awesome to have this technology, and I love it. So, all right, here we go. This is a good one. I read this article. I read it a couple times, and I'm like, man, this one really pisses me off. This comes from OPB.org. As Oregon enforces its water use requirement, small farmers face the consequences. And again, it's kind of similar to, did you guys catch that California minimum wage? I'm sure you couldn't have missed it. But so last week, April 1st, on April Fool's Day, they seem to love to bring in taxes because Justin Trudeau also brought in an increased carbon tax that day. They brought in a $20 minimum wage for fast food workers. However, there was a caveat in there, and I don't know if anybody caught it, but the caveat was for any fast food places, except for those who bake fresh bread. So apparently, Gavin Newsom is really good friends with the CEO of Panera Bread. And so he probably, you know, making the money sign with my fingers there for anybody on the audio only. And somehow they put that in the rule that allowed them to not have to increase minimum wage. And if you guys have ever read 299 Days by Glenn Tate, holy shit, some of the stuff that happens in there is almost identical to what's going on in California. So there you go. Not saying that we're heading into a collapse, but I'm just saying that how can you try to raise wages like that and think it's just, man, I don't even know how to say this without it sounding awful, but it really ends up just being another tax. People are like, I need a raise. So when I worked at Dairy Queen 20 odd years ago, every time minimum wage went up, the owner would come down and put every item on the menu up. So there you go. Josh C says, gotta love crony capitalism. Hey, dude, I get it. I am an anarcho-capitalist, and I think capitalism is the best system on the planet. But when you get government in bed with a bunch of oligarchies, you basically get, anyway, whatever it is, it's not capitalism, not socialism either, but fascism. I would say it's a bit of fascism, similar to maybe Nazi Germany, but here we go. All right, back to the news, Tim. You went way down a rabbit hole and came back up the other side. All right, this Christina, she surveys her field, pointing out the garlic she hopes to grow, the blueberries she's no longer going to be able to sell. So, of course, the news, they love to take the kind of sad-looking photos. But in this case, this lady has legitimate beef. Here we go. This section of the field, I don't know if I'll even be able to plant it, she said. I'm potentially just going to put in a cover crop and build up the soil while I live in limbo and see what's going to happen with the water rights. Now, this is not rain. This is not a river that flows through her property. As we discover in a little bit here, this is a well drilled on her own property, and she's not allowed to use it for what she deems fit. Whew. For 7 years now, DeCampo has used well water to grow her vegetables, which she sold at farmers markets and to her neighbors. She said that's been her primary source of income. And if you guys didn't catch that, she lives in Oregon, right? You know, we know how that is. Like, is that Washington State Light? I don't know. However, everything changed last September when Oak Song Farm received a letter from her regional office of Water Resource Department. Say that five times fast. It was a notification that the farm couldn't irrigate its commercial crops without a water right. Wow. So she is one of those mid-sized farmers, not even a mid-size. She's a lady who grows some crops, takes them to her local farmer's market, and sells them. That's it. And she wants to be able to irrigate them with a well that came with her property on her property. Now, this entire article, I found this from a meme or a screenshot. So here's what ends up happening. I get these screenshots on Instagram, and they're like rage-inducing headlines. I'm like, there's no way that's true. There's no way that's true. And so I Google it, because I definitely don't like to go by screenshots on Instagram or Twitter. And it turned out, following down this rabbit hole, that the screenshot was basically true. So follow me. Here we go. Water is a publicly owned resource in Oregon, meaning property owners need government approval for many of its uses. There are some exemptions, though, as those without a water right can use up to 5,000 gallons a day for commercial or industrial purposes. However, this doesn't include irrigation. I don't get it. Anyway, I got to read that again, guys. So those without a water right, so in other words, those who have a well that don't have a right to be able to pump out of their own well, are allowed to use up to 5,000 gallons a day for commercial or industrial purposes. However, that does not include growing food, i.e. irrigation. For Del Campo, this is the lady, it's frustrating double standard. Here's the best part, guys. You ready for this? She estimates she was using fewer than 1,000 gallons a day for agriculture. Huh. She says, I'm not overusing water. I'm not overusing land. I'm just trying to have a small business and provide my community with food. In my mind, one of the most important things that a person could do. She said, officials, this is the scary part. And this is the part right here that was the screenshot that I caught that I thought there's no way in the world it's true. Sit down, buckle your seatbelts. McCord said officials used aerial photography, complaints from neighbors, and in-the-field observation to find potential violations. They said they got new funding in 2021 that allowed the state to hire more state staff for enforcement. So, aerial photography, read between the lines, drones maybe, because you're not going to be using, I mean, maybe it was planes before, but this was the thing that the article basically said Oregon was using drones to shut down small farms. Now, of course, that article left out a lot of the key facts. I wanted to dive a little deeper, and here we go. Aerial photography, complaints from neighbors, and in-the-field observation. So private investigators, people that you pissed off, and either drones or airplanes. And they're coming for the small guy because the small one is the one that doesn't really have the money to fight back. How do you fight against that? I don't know. Maybe grow crops that they don't know about. I mean, here's my suggestion. Get the hell out of Oregon. I mean, do I love, you know, I like Canada. I mean, I like parts of Canada. I like the money we make from our businesses. But why do you think I'm sitting in a cabin on a ridge in Tennessee? Because plan B, right? Even though I said at SRF, don't have a plan B. This is a different plan B. I'm going to turn on this lamp here and it's going to brighten everything up really quick. There we go. That should be good. All right. So we have, let's go back and check out. There's a cute picture of the goats in case anybody wants to see it. So here's the last part of this. Following the letter, DeCampo has applied to pull and store water from a nearby creek, although she may not be able to afford the necessary infrastructure. So here we are. Ooh, man. I'm not even sure. Here's my thing. I'm not even sure why there'd even be an option to pull out of a creek when she has a well on her own property. It's tough. Anyway, so basically, you know, if you can afford to fight, you might be approved by the government to be able to pull water out of a creek, but then she needs a whole bunch of holding facilities and a whole bunch of other type things. Just an absolute mess, guys. The reality is that farmers in this position are going to have to drastically change their operation if they want to keep the doors open. And many of the solutions that are out there are very, very costly. Simple as that. Now, we are dealing with, especially Chris down in his area, a little further south than where I live in Alberta, but we have been in a multi-year drought right now, and there are issues. Now, when it comes down to it, water rights are, and I might have this kind of wrong, but I'm pretty sure they're privately owned in Alberta. And anytime the government wants to impose regulations on them, they have to negotiate for those rights. But we're in a weird situation. But I want to tell you right now, there is nothing worse than some hoity-toity government bureaucrat showing up at your door saying, guess what? You can't use your water to grow crops to sell to the people. That's a bad situation. So let's go back to the comments here, guys. We got... So Josh says, got to love crony capitalism, and then bingo to the fascism comment. We got malpractice capitalism from Pippin. And Rachel Brown says, I forgot to hit the thumbs up till now. Who else forgot? Yes, who else forgot? Just kidding. It's all right. Good. Thank you, Rachel, for supporting. Rachel says, Nicole Sauce did something on this last week. She said they are totally trying to ruin small farmers. Nicole is from Oregon originally, and she would know for sure. And Rachel Brown says, I wonder if they can use gray water for irrigation. I don't know. They're probably telling you that, I don't want to guess. I would say some kind of smart ass snide comment to that for sure. And Dixon says, dig deep. There's been rumblings of well metering here. That's scary, guys. And Hardway, Alaska says communism, and Pippin says legalize surface-to-air missiles for anti-drones. So, yeah, I was talking to Brian Alexovich today. He dropped by for a little bit, and he was saying they were having a Civil War reenactment right by where he's staying, and they were firing off cannons like crazy. So, yeah, I mean, cannons, just saying, you know, there you go. All right, moving on. This one's a fun one. This one's going to piss some people off. Not really, but another story about EVs. Electric vehicles are changing how America goes camping. CNN.com. Here you go. Anyway, for those who want to know, I throw all the articles in the comments, or sorry, in the description, so they'll be there for anybody listening on audio, and they will be in the YouTube link after the show. They didn't get in there before the show because I forgot, so I will throw them in at the end there, so they're there. So this is an interesting article. This is not a pro EV article or a negative one, but there's some prepping aspects to this that I really liked. I went a little deep with a few of these articles this week. I had a ton to pick from, and these were some that really kind of tickled the old gray matter up in the head. So EVs are changing how America goes camping. I'd like to interject with, for the better or for the worse? Question mark. All right. Only about 1% of Americans currently have an EV, electric vehicle, according to campsites. But 4% of regular campers do. That doesn't really surprise me, because when it comes down to it, I think folks who go camping tend to be a little more back to nature, tend to be quite a bit more in favor of electric vehicles. So we're looking at what, 400% more people with EVs that camp than don't. So there you go. All right. What do we got for you? So first concern with electric vehicles, and this is one that everybody knows, and I'm going to touch on something that the article doesn't completely touch on, but electric motors have a distinct advantage when it comes to towing camper trailers. They can pull strongly at low or high speeds without straining or needing to shift. This dude here says, I'm not constantly sitting there watching transmission temps climb. I'm not watching motor temps climb on hills, and we live in Texas hill country. But here's the one here. One major concern campers share when towing an EV is range. And then, of course, they try to throw in that, yes, you lose gas range and electric range with a trailer. However, and here's the big however, the electric vehicles lose a lot of range. And the big reason for that, and this was in with the new Ford Lightning, it has to do with aerodynamics. So the vehicles are designed really, really well for cutting through the air. And when you put, and this works this way for gas vehicles as well, but apparently the aerodynamicness, is that the right word, of electric vehicles has been engineered to work really, really well. And when you put a flat camper behind it, it absolutely destroys its mileage. So that's the big thing that they're running into right now. And so what you're going to start seeing is more aerodynamic designs for campers that are designed for electric vehicles. The Airstream was kind of interviewed. Well, okay, yes, no, trucks are not aerodynamic in general, but the Lightning was supposed to be designed for that. But as soon as you put a trailer behind it, not that it's that much different, it cuts it way back. And no, trucks are not aerodynamic per se. One major concern, yeah, we already talked about that. Lynn says his truck can go roughly half as far on one charge as it usually does when pulling his Rockwood mini light trailer. Now that is a very, very light. And Pippin says cows are more aerodynamic than Jeeps, just saying. That is true, but Jeeps, especially them ones with them big lifted knobby tires, they almost sound like they're hurting trying to go fast. It is what it is. But this guy says he can get about 150 miles of driving range with it. Now, this is an ideal situation. This is a truck with a very tiny trailer. Some of the bigger ones not doing so good. And right now, no matter what anybody says, the EVs just aren't designed for towing any distance or any weight. So I said it. We talked about aerodynamics there just a little bit. But here, plugging in. This is another thought that I hadn't really given a lot of thought to. It's going to become an issue as time goes on, but charging can be a major issue, both at campsites and on the road. Now, I figured when they said that, they're talking about just not having any infrastructure to plug into, you know, like fast, rapid charging. However, the biggest problem right now is people plugging into campsite electricity. Here we go. Lynn says he plugs into the same power outlets that are usually used to provide household power to run lights and small appliances and trailers and RVs. It's a controversial move, since technically those power pedestals aren't generally designed to charge EVs. He says he always asks the campground operator, and nobody's had an issue with it yet. But he says, if they're at 90% capacity and all of a sudden there's 15 or 20 EV trucks that roll in, you could be exceeding the campground's capacity. So there's another problem that is going to have to be developed over time if people are going to start using more electric vehicles. And no matter what we say, it's going to happen, right? He said that's a challenge for you, yeah, for campground people. So there's a futuristic looking aerodynamic Airstream camper. Particularly a lot of these campgrounds across the country have older infrastructure, like our entire country, that can't support it. Currently, KOA campsites has dedicated EV chargers at 5% of its campsites. So 95% of all of the KOA campsites or campgrounds do not have fast chargers or any chargers for electric vehicles. So that's a problem too. But he says he thinks that that could expand. The wording here is really vague. O'Rourke said, but she thinks that could probably expand to about 50% within the next 5 to 10 years. So read in that what you will. But here's the one I wanted to talk about. And here's something I learned new today. Powering the campsite. One of the biggest things, you know, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, because there are some aspects to EVs that I think will work really, really well for preppers. And I think the biggest one, well, two things. Number one is long-term availability of fuel. Even if that's just a little bit of fuel, eventually your gas is going to run out. Eventually your gas is going to go bad. However, if you have solar panels, you could use an electric vehicle or an electric bike or an electric motorcycle long-term in a grid-down scenario. I like that. But here's the better one. This is the more practical one. One nice thing about EVs, though, is that they also bring power with them, thanks to their hefty batteries. Here's something. An F-150 Lightning, for instance, has 11 power outlets, including those in the bed of the truck and in the frunk. I just learned a new word. The frunk, or front trunk, under the hood. We use the frunk almost as an outdoor kitchen, because it takes a lot of electrical strain off the camper to be able to run coffee makers and ice makers in the front trunk. And he can do it without having to fire up a gas power generator, which keeps the campsite a little quieter. Now, again, you've always got a power balance issue. And that's what I'm running into here at the cabin. I've got my smaller Blue Eddy and my larger Anchor power stations, and I'm always making sure that I'm not pulling too much juice from here, too much juice from there. Having a little solar will help. I do have one small panel here, but I am going to get some more from Sean at some point. But if you're careful and you follow, you know, if you make sure you know how much power you have, I love the idea of being able to bug out and use the power off your, I mean, you wouldn't want to strand yourself, for instance, but go to a campsite and be able to set up a little bit and use some stuff. So that's where I really like that. Is it perfect? No. Is it going to be difficult for a long time? Yes. Are there benefits to electric vehicles that most preppers don't want to admit? Also, yes. Is it right of the government to force us into electric vehicles? Hell no. And you know where I stand on that. So there you go. All right, let's take a look at what the community has to say. And this one's from Wired Edge Workshop. They said, I think it's Airstream that has placed a battery under the floor of the camper and drive wheels. Holy shit, which helped to assist the pulling vehicle and the camper can park itself. See? Love it. That is ingenuity at its best. That's really cool. Thanks for sharing that, Wired Edge. I'm going to see if I can remember to check that out, and maybe we'll share some more about that down the road. All right, and our third article from Stranger Than Fiction. This is a funny one. This is a cool one. Comes from Reader's Digest, which I didn't even know was a thing until a couple of weeks before I went on my trip. I went to my chiropractor, and he had a copy of Reader's Digest sitting on his counter. And I said, dude, I thought they stopped printing that years ago. Apparently not. However, they do make some interesting articles. So here's an article with kind of a, it's not funny, but it's a bit humorous, and it deals with OPSEC, operational security. In other words, how much information do you actually put out there? So Reader's Digest or RD.com. I was a mail carrier for 20 years. Here's what I know about you. If that's not a clickbaity headline. Now, I got to tell you this, though. It's really funny because the article starts out with the postman saying, I'm not looking through your mail, but that doesn't mean I don't notice things. And then he lists about 15 things that he notices while looking through your mail. So there's that. But anyway, the guy says, we don't read your mail, not even the outside, unless something is really off, says Nigel, 62, a letter carrier with 24 years of service, who declined to share his last name for privacy reasons. Probably doesn't want to lose that cushy union job. We're too busy. We have too many things to deliver and too many stops to make to get into your business. So there's some truth to that. Security through obscurity. I like that. But here's the things that stand out that the weatherman, the mailman sees. And most of them have to do with the fact that something out of the ordinary has changed. He notices when you're on vacation, placing a hold on your mail delivery is one of the top ways experts recommend to protect your home. I always take extra care to look out for the houses when I know people are gone. So the mailman notices if you're not getting mail. And other people might notice that you're not getting mail as well. So something to think about. Number two, you're pregnant. Now, this may or may not have much to do with being, well, anyway. The mailman says, as many mums-to-be can attest, it seems like baby formula companies know you're pregnant before you do. True. Companies send out whole packages of bottle formula samples, and they're labeled all over with pictures of babies and brand names, so it's pretty obvious where they are. Now, I'm hard-pressed to think how somebody nefarious might use the information that you're having a baby. I mean, maybe, I don't know. I guess somebody could try to steal your identity or the potential baby's identity. I'm not really sure. But again, there's something that just quickly sifting through your mail or, you know, walking past your mailbox, you're going to know. How about you just had a new baby? Here's something. Again, we did this the day of the workshop workday, but he said it's still fairly common to see pink or blue balloons tied to a mailbox for a baby shower to announce the birth of a new little one. Yeah, something kind of common. Something I've noticed around the Camden area and in Tennessee in general is that parents who are proud of their kids, whether they're graduating with honors or the big one I've seen is high school sports teams, they put a poster or a lawn sign that looks like a political ad and they put the kid's name, what sport they play, what team they play for, and a picture of them on their front lawn. I'm not slamming it or anything, just a cultural difference, but that is a lot of information you're putting out there. How about this one? You're in trouble with the law. While they're not going through your mail, sometimes an odd piece will catch your letter carrier's eye. Court documents look different than normal mail, and you know what they are and what they look like in your area. So again, something the mailman's going to notice. I remember back when I was in the oil patch, we were at a place getting our the rig completely recertified, and the mechanic said to me, can you go pick up a part off of my bench there? And I went to get it, and I just happened to see his mail, and there was a letter from his parole officer there, and it stuck out like a sore thumb. I don't even remember exactly why, but I just saw it there. I was like, oh, shit, dude. So there you go. How about this one? You're selling drugs. Now, I'm not saying go out and sell drugs, but what I am saying is that if you're selling things, pay attention. It's the amount and type of packages you send, along with the strange ways you pay for them, that are big tip-offs. The postman says, I figured out a guy on my route was probably a drug dealer because he would send packages with dozens of stamps taped to them instead of a printed label. He didn't want to take them into the post or go through our online system because he didn't want a digital trail. Okay, so there's so many bad ways that could go. But if you are doing a gray market business of any import or any amount, there you go. You could end up having a nosy mailman who doesn't read your mail, but does read your mail, reporting you to the police, even though you're not selling drugs. Just saying, just one more thing to possibly think about. Also, you're buying drugs. We'll skip that one. How about you got a new dog? This one just made me smile. Post workers on foot often carry pepper spray in their bags to deal with aggressive dogs. They're highly aware of any pups along the route and notice when a new one shows up. Says, sometimes I'll hear barking where there wasn't any before, or I'll see a new beware of dog sign. But every once in a while, someone will bring the dog out to meet me so we can be on friendly terms. I like that. But he notices the barking. He notices the beware of dog sign. If he's doing it, some ne'er-do-well is going to notice those things as well. Dogs are a good deterrent. and you have a kid graduating from high school. High school seniors may be the one group that gets more mail than pregnant women. Colleges from all across the country send big, glossy flyers. Jeff says, other tip-offs, you've got a high school senior, or signs in your front yard, like I talked about, writing or decorations on your car, and balloons or signs for grad parties. Yep. Other things that he might notice, you're having an affair, you're getting a divorce. But the ones I wanted to kind of deal with were personal information and things that we could maybe take some tips from for the idea of preparedness. And again, it's just about how much information is out there that we don't even think about, right, guys? All right, let's take a look at the comments. But and if you can hear it, there we are. Wired Edge Workshop. I think it's Airstream. Yep, sorry, went back a little too far. We lost signal for just a quick second. And Pippin says, reminds me of stickers on the back of a family vehicle. Yep. Rachel says, people steal kids. Byron Roberts, the garbage man, knows more about people than they realize. You are right. Hey, L2 Survived. Good to see you. When I was a PI, I was always amazed by the stuff I could find out about someone from their car, from the bumper stickers to things I could see by looking through the windows. Yep. Some evenings when I'm dozing off to bed, I'll watch body cam footage from cops. It's infinitely entertaining. And the stuff that cops see just by walking up to a window blows me away. And Pippin, just married, written on the window, suckered. Yep, there you go. So it's crazy, the information we throw out there, isn't it? But yeah, so that was our look this week at Stranger Than Fiction.
He's dead. They're all dead. Everyone, you and I are in a dead world. And I'm glad it's dead. Cheap, honky-tonk of a world.
Coming up next is Workshop Wasteland.
So we got Workshop Wasteland for you. This is where we take a look at post-apocalyptic fiction, movies, books, video games, whatever it is. And it's something that folks seem to be into. And we have had a virtual treasure trove of post-apocalyptic goodness this week. There's a ton to talk about, but I'm going to hit three or four of the big ones. You guys can figure out the rest yourself. But here's a movie I hadn't heard of until just recently. Yet another Nick Cage movie. He's been in the middle of a indie film renaissance. He's doing great. This is called Arcadian. And the short premise is a father and his twin teenage sons fight to survive in a remote farmhouse at the end of the world. Or a little bit further down here. Arcadian is about a man played by Nick Cage and his twin teenage sons, Max Jenkins and Jaden Martell, who got a fight to survive in a remote farmhouse at the end of the end of the world. The challenges of growing up are made worse by the terrors awaiting the boys and their father after the sun has set. So, sounds good. We're going to talk about the Rotten Tomatoes scores here in a minute, but it's doing really well. It's been well reviewed. Definitely one Becky and I are going to catch at some point. Remember, a lot of these are just informational articles. I'm not necessarily telling you that it's worth watching. I think I really frigged Chris up. I think I might have almost ruined his marriage here a while back when I mentioned a movie that I hadn't seen yet. He watched it, and yeah, not very good. There you go. So, Arcadian, something to kind of keep an eye on. Looks like it could be good. Here's another one. This one comes from the Holiday Report. The Hollywood Reporter. Sci-fi classic Earth Abides, greenlit as TV series, starring Alexander Ludwig. Now, I have not read Earth Abides yet. I've heard great things about it. It's definitely a classic, and it's worth checking out. MGM Plus, all these services are called Plus now, right? They're going to do a new take on George R. Stewart's post-apocalyptic novel. Synopsis, Earth Abides has been officially greenlit as a limited series. I think I read somewhere else that there's going to be 6 episodes. The story follows the aftermath of a global plague and is being adapted by creator and showrunner Todd Komnerke from Sully and has signed Alexander Ludwig from Vikings. I like that. So the description, leading character Ish is a brilliant but solitary young geologist living a semi-isolated life and awakens from a coma only to find that there are no one left alive but him. Sounds a little similar. I mean, well, this was written long before The Walking Dead or 28 Days Later, but an interesting kind of premise. There you go. And Chris Dixon says, always buyer beware when it comes to movies. Amen to that. And Dixon says, if it's Nick Cage, it's bound to be meh. You know what? He's made a few really good movies over the last couple of years. One I loved was Mom and Dad. And if you haven't seen it, and if you're into horror, oh, it was good. And yes, Wired Edge Workshop says, Fallout TV series was just released on Prime this week. I'm dying to watch it. But Becky and I, certain shows we promise that we'll watch with each other. I would have loved to have done kind of a weekly episode show like I did with The Last of Us, but it hasn't happened yet. And so, yeah, I cannot wait to see Fallout. The Rotten Tomato scores have been great on it. One more quick story here. Over 28 years later, if you guys haven't heard about that. I'm stoked. Looks like they're going to make it a trilogy. Could end up being horrible. Who knows? But Candyman director in talks to helm part two of the new trilogy. And the reason this up was I really enjoyed the new Candyman remake. It was surprising. It was very... up here. All right. So we got Caleb. Caleb, hey, great to see you. Caleb Gillen said, hey, Tim, I just applied for Homestead Apprentice. John told me to look you up. I'm in Calgary, Alberta. Dude, we got to meet up at some point. That would be great. It is awesome to have you. I am normally roughly 4 hours as the crow, no, as the truck flies. Yeah, as I drive. Yeah, anyway, I'm East Central, right on the Saskatchewan border, but it's great to see you. And keep up with me. You can, come into our Telegram group. The link's in the description. But yeah, dude, we got to catch up. That's awesome. I didn't know any Canadians were there. The problem is right now I'm 3,000 kilometers south of you in Tennessee. But yeah, awesome. All right. What do we got next for you guys? Oh, yeah. And that was the other thing I wanted to tell you. So I haven't even talked about, yes, oh, L2 survived. Let's go back to the comments for a minute. L2 Survive says, has anyone seen the TV show called Jeremiah? Yes. And I loved it. Love it. It is definitely a bit dated at this point, but loved that it had Luke Perry and Malcolm Jamal Warner in it. It was directed or created by J. Michael Straczynski. And it's definitely a hard R Showtime kind of show. It was one of the shows that got me into kind of prestige apocalyptic TV. However, kind of funny story, many moons ago, I tagged J. Michael Straczynski on Twitter asking, will we ever have another season of Jeremiah? And he basically told me to, you know, fluff off. And now he basically, it sounded like he had a horrible time creating, directing, producing the show, and that there was no chance in hell that it would ever happen. But I met Luke Perry one time at a Comic-Con before he passed away, and we talked quite a bit about Jeremiah, and he was personally a big fan of it. So yes, love the show. Be prepared for the special effects are a bit dated. The show's 20 years old now, but it's definitely worth looking up if you haven't seen it. And yes, dude, good luck on Homestead Apprentice. Absolutely. And Bud, hey, yeah, great to see you. Bud Conkle, I hope I got that right. Do you have a favorite collector silver round? As a matter of fact, I do. So, okay, I guess let's go two routes with this right now. But number one, if you're talking about what do I stack? At the moment, I stack government rounds. So either a maple leaf, a Canadian maple, or a silver eagle. I love silver eagles, but I am going to, over the next couple of years, try to fill a monster box of maple leafs. So if you're going to stack and you can afford the slight premium, go with mint rounds, so things that are certified by a government. A Cougaran from South Africa, a Roo from Australia, a Britannia from, of all places, Britain, or, you know, Canada, US, those. But if you're talking collector silver round, now I'm not much into, you know, the fancy, weird colored ones that you will see the mints put out. But what I do love is Zombucks or Zombie Bucks, whatever they're called. And the first few, I've been collecting the new ones, but the first few were done based on classic traditional silver rounds. And then the picture was turned into some kind of zombified corpse. They're awesome. I picked up a couple. I actually started my collection from Jason from Kentucky Sustainable Living. We did a swap through the mail, and now I have the whole set. So, yeah, if you can't tell, I'm a bit of a geek for that kind of stuff. But yeah, it was definitely one of those things. Let me turn the light up here just a little more for you. There we go. All right. So moving right along. This one is Finding Freedom. This is a little different. This is where I went along and it's kind of morphed over time. It was originally something just for entrepreneurship, for freedom, but really what it comes down to is building things you want to do. And so a lot of this ends up being kind of geared toward content creators. And this week, once again, is a meme, or actually a screenshot from a YouTube community page from Film Booth, one of my greatest, my favorite creator's creator on YouTube. And so I'm going to share with you 12 of his tips. I shared them in, if you're a content creator and you want to be part, we have a super secret, not really, but it's a Telegram group called the Workshop, Creators Workshop or something like that. And it's where all of us can share thoughts and notes and that sort of thing. So here's a few. And this dude is smack on. And the cool thing about these tips is, you know what, they work, whether it's for content creation or business or whatever you want to talk about. But here it is. Your hard work will pay off. You just need to keep going. Yep. Talked about that at Self-Reliance Festival. Failure is not an option. And the people who succeed just kept going. The only time you fail is when you stop. Don't try to come up with smart answers to people who attack them in your comments. You can never win with them. Yep, 100%. That's why I've stopped responding to trolls. That doesn't mean that I won't occasionally get pissed off by one and use their name as a discount code, but for the most part, no more troll talk. Don't waste your time on idiots like that. Just move on and be done with it. Stay out of YouTube Studio as much as you can. In other words, look at your analytics and then move on. Don't live there. Your subscriber count doesn't matter nearly as much as your views per video. That is true until it isn't, but it is true 100%. when you get over 250,000 subs, people will start to look up to you though. So there's that. Subscribers don't matter except until they do. I'm not going to elaborate a whole lot on that now. I could do a whole episode on it, but don't try to do too much at once. Pick one area of focus, complete the project, and then move on to another. Brian and I were talking by the tailgate of the truck today, and that's exactly what we were talking about, was focusing on one platform or maybe two at the most. But I've realized if you want to do anything great in your life, you have to focus on one or two things, really. If you try to do all of the things in all the places, you're going to do everything shitty. So for me, my focus has been 100% on YouTube the last year or so, and it's paying dividends. Short form content is a waste of time until you can outsource 100% of it. I don't know. I mean, I get it. I'm not going to be spending time making a whole bunch of TikToks at the moment, but there's some thoughts there. Write a script, then leave it for 2 weeks. Come back to edit it. You won't remember what you wrote, so you'll get way more into the viewer's shoes. I like that tip. That works for a ton of things. There's so many things out there that if you just write it, sit on it, that's what I do with presentations now. So the one I just did for Self-Reliance Festival, I wrote it maybe a month beforehand and just left it until about a week before I went. And then it's like, I don't know, it kind of energizes your brain. You get to go back, look at it with kind of fresh eyes, but your brain's been doing all this cool shit in the background that brains do. And then it helps you kind of build up on it. Work smarter, not harder. I've said that so many times. Build systems for everything. Amen to that. If you don't have a system, you're wasting time and spinning your wheels. And don't try to be a YouTuber. Be this right here is worth the price of admission. Although I don't think I was actually charging you guys to come in here tonight, though, were you? Here we go. Don't try to be a YouTuber. Listen to this. Don't try to be a YouTuber. Be a business person with a YouTube channel. You'll work fewer hours, make more money, and help more people. Boom. Enough said. But that is true. That is why I am making money with 15,000 subscribers that eclipses people I've talked to with 100,000 subscribers, because I treat my YouTube channel as a business. Anyway, there you go. Is what it is. L2 Survive says, we used to call that procrastinating. Yep. And Chris Dixon says, works for so many things. Do the thing, leave it, come back and polish it 100%. Yes. Because I used to be a really good not finisher. And I would get things 80%, 90% done. And then I'd say, hey, I'll come back to them. But now I do. So anyway, there you go. Yeah, so I love that. If you're looking to follow a good dude, I've plugged him immensely on YouTube. And his stuff's awesome. So here you go. And yes, let's have a discussion. Hardway Alaska says, subscribers kind of matters. You need, I think, 50 or 100 to do lives. I only have 30, but summer's coming and I can put better content out winter. It's all snowy. Yes. So what I shouldn't be so flippant, but what I mean by subscribers don't matter until they do, they matter for certain things. So they matter for getting monetized on YouTube. They matter for, like you said, being able to go live. I think it was 100, maybe they've dropped it to 50. So it matters for going live. Then it matters for getting monetized. At 500, you can open channel memberships and a couple other things now. At 1,000, you can get ads. Okay. Once you hit 1,000, all the rest of the milestones don't matter, except they do. They don't matter for making money on YouTube, but they matter for being treated as a subject matter expert in your field. They matter when companies are looking at brands or channels to partner with. They matter in as much as your reach to other people, those kind of things. So subscribers become way more esoteric once you've gotten beyond that base level of 1,000. Let's leave it at that for now, but maybe I'll have to do a whole thing on it at some point. Wired Edge says, as a jack of all trades person, focusing on one or two things can be a big challenge. I get it. For me, I am that type of person, but I go kind of balls to the wall on one thing and then I drop it like a bad habit. We've talked about that before, but yeah. All right. So next, we haven't done a cookbook of the collapse in a couple of weeks, but the main reason is I haven't had any new submissions and I'm away from home for my cookbook. So I haven't added any. However, I have a really good update for cookbook of the collapse and a workshop member. I'm not going to give away her name yet. It'll be a surprise for the first one, but we're going to have another submitter kind of roving reporter, that type of thing. But this young lady reached out to me and said she'd like to start making videos around some of these cookbook of the collapse. And she has a ton of recipes she's going to do. So she's going to do, yeah, thank you, Byron. He has two to send. Send them along. I'd love to have them. So she's going to do a 5 to 7 minute video of putting it together. So it'll be another video segment that we can play. And it's going to tie into prepping food, cooking out of your stores, things like that. I am excited. I love that people are wanting to become part of this. It makes me really, really excited. Caleb says, I know how to cook porcupine. When I first moved to Alberta, my brother-in-law, Barrett, always told me, he said, the one animal that was illegal to hunt in Alberta was porcupine. I'm not sure if it's actually true or not, but he said the main reason was you could sneak up behind it and club it in its head. So it wasn't a fair fight. I don't know. But my Uncle Jim did one year cook up porcupine, didn't tell his wife, Janie. And she came home. He said, what'd you think that? She said, that was a great roast. Well, she was mad afterwards. I think he slept on the couch for a couple nights. But shout out to my Uncle Paul. You guys heard about him. I told you it took him a while to come out of the sedation. He officially went home yesterday. He is completely back to himself. I'm excited. I'm really happy for him because 20 years ago, they basically told him to go home and just wait to die at some point because they could not do the heart surgery on him. They needed to, and they just completed it. And now he has to get healthy so he can get his gallbladder removed. But either way, the reason I talk about Uncle Paul on here is he was one of my very first followers on the channel. He's always been one of my cheerleaders. He'd hate to hear me call him a cheerleader, but if you happen to be listening to this, Uncle Paul, it's great to hear you're up and kind of walking around and stuff, but he was always posting on my videos early on. And I always appreciate you, Uncle Paul. So good to have him back up and going. All right. So yeah, cookbook of the collapse is going to be exciting. All right. Next we have Sunshine Prepper. You guys know Willow as Sunshine Prepper. Let's bring her in here and she's going to share her story this week. Actually her news. And we're going to see, we've got the mute and everything working right. Here you go.
Hello and welcome to today's Sunshine Prepper News. Hello, and welcome to today's Sunshine Prepper News. I'm Willow, the Sunshine Prepper, here to spread a bit of positivity on the unavoidable doom and gloom. Before we hop in today, I'd love to quickly introduce you to a breathing technique called alternate nostril breathing. With regular practice, it can lower your blood pressure and lessen your stress response. We'll do one, maybe two. First, you'll exhale, and then one cycle is you inhale on the left and exhale on the right, and then you inhale on the right and exhale on the left. Okay, let's go. Okay, there's proper finger positionings for that. Sorry, it's more like this. I just got excited, but I wanted to show that to you guys real quick. Great job. My lungs feel full of winter gunk and in need of spring cleaning. You'll want to have clear, healthy lungs to outrun the zombie horde. So don't underestimate the power of practicing breathing. That's the alternate nostril breath. Okay, enough of my health coach coming out. Let's get into today's news. First, I'll share a few noteworthy points of interest that you can look up more on if you so please. And then I'm going to get into the topic in the thumbnail. Who is the enemy? All right. First up, we all survived the eclipse. Hooray. And then some real news, like about 4 million chickens have been culled in the name of bird flu. Egg prices, look out. There was another ship that lost power and almost hit a critical bridge in New York. We had an earthquake in Taiwan, also an earthquake in New Jersey, and the Statue of Liberty was struck by lightning. While this one sounds a bit like it hopped out of the Book of Revelations, the statue does get hit a few times a year, so put your tin hat away for now. The housing defaults are at their highest levels in a decade, and Dollar Tree is closing hundreds of Family Dollar stores while also planning to raise Dollar Tree store prices up to $1.50 to up to $7. So they're $1.25 to $5, they're going to go to $1.50 to $7. Gas is going up around 50 cents over a few days in some places. It'll surely plateau, but if you can, stay topped off. A quick update on the war on traditional foods. Over in the UK, you can now go to jail for 6 months and or, not 100% sure, a 5,000 pound fine if you fail to register your poultry, even if you have just one. This is in the name of tightening up disease control and safeguarding bird health. What's crazy is only about 13% of people wanted this government overreach, but it passed anyway. And lastly, something that should seriously be bigger news in the USA, which is a Russian ship with up to $40 million of undocumented, heavily sanctioned uranium that was headed for the U.S. was detained at a NATO port. This is the same type of material we use in nuclear energy plants and is very capable of causing harm in the wrong hands. Just some thoughts. Which brings us to my question of who is the enemy? Is it Russia? Is it China? ISIS? Or some combination of foreign actors? Is the enemy our corrupt politicians and elite ruling class? Is the enemy fans of the playground? Who all is our government supposedly spending money to defend us against? Well, recently it was a priority for the National Guard to run an oddly specific exercise. With the National Guard, the scenarios developed for the training can be whatever they want, whatever they want. With a bounty of foreign options, they chose to focus on a scenario where domestic violent extremists plant a nuclear bomb in a stadium where people are gathering to hear the vice president speak. Okay, I get the premise of the scenario, and it's great to practice the intricacies of clearing out every teensy tiny space in a stadium and how to handle and manage all the aspects of a threat like that. I very much see the value in the National Guard practicing how to actually coordinate with FBI and state local law enforcement, but we just recently had the FBI warning of people who want to do harm in the U.S. crossing through the open border. So why, in the ever-loving why, is the villain in this training scenario a domestic source? Make it make sense. It doesn't seem to be a one-off either. In November 2023, a threat assessment was put out titled "The Threat from Within: An Overview of the Domestic Violent Extremist Threat Facing U.S. Nuclear Security Practitioners." They say things like insider threats and non-state actors are the most persistent concerns facing nuclear security practitioners. And then they call on the J6 insurrection as revealing the flaws in a system designed to weed out the unsuitable candidates for effectively protecting national assets. Pretty much they're implying that anyone with the wrong political affiliation should not be involved in any nuclear or grid operations. This is very interesting. It's kind of arguable that blueprints are being laid to blame domestic people for a foul event, even if it's done by a foreign actor. But off, our government has been, of course, illegally surveilling and building profiles on Americans who are anti-gun, anti-lockdown and mandates, and support border security. Extreme targets of domestic nations. In two genders or doesn't want to drink glyphosate. That's all the food for thought I've got for today. Let's close out with a regular good old deep breath and sigh. Okay. The assignment this week, if you choose to accept, is to give a long, heartfelt hug to someone that you love, because life is precious and short and anything can happen out there. Wishing you and your family the best. Sunshine Prepper out.
So, not much to add to that. I love that Willow's doing this, and thank you, Willow. She has committed, and she has not missed a week yet, despite me missing 2 weeks of this week in prepping over the last 3 months. But she is kicking butt and taking names. It's exciting. I appreciate her for doing this. If you haven't supported her yet, go and hit the subscribe, Sunshine Prepper on YouTube. Here's the thing. She's not wrong. Why? I don't understand. Okay. I understand a nuclear threat. I understand the idea that it's in a stadium. I just don't get the coyotes are howling, guys. The door's open right next to me, so you might get to hear them eventually. I don't understand why the focus is on domestic terrorism. I get it, but I don't. Anyway, let's move on from that. So thank you, Willow, for sharing that. I love that people want to. And if there's other folks out there who are like, hey, I wouldn't mind putting together a segment monthly for this week in prepping, I'm definitely open to considering other segments that fit into this. I love the old kind of roving reporter, kind of checks in from outside. It's the type of thing Art Bell used to do that. He had the lady who would travel all over the country. And I actually remember one she did from England where she would go and check out crop circles and aliens. But if somebody's out there interested in doing something like that, reach out to me and let me know. All right. So from there, we're going to slide into...
And you stay on the back roads, and you keep your gun handy. Our country is still full of thieving, murdering patriots.
Get ready for I Read It on the Internet.
A lot of people love that intro, and that little clip there comes from Panic in Year Zero. I love that. It's one of my favorite prepping movies of all time. But here we are. We are going to look at I Read It on the Internet, and that's where I take a quick look at our preppers over on reddit.com, and we figure out exactly the top story of the week, and we share it. And this one was a really good one. This came from a stupid dog face is the username. There is some original usernames over on Reddit, but this is a good one. Day 4, grid still down. Power company says maybe tonight. Going to throw something in there. They lost power at our home in my town while we were down here in Tennessee. I got a text message. The text actually worked, and it let me know when the power was off and when it came back on. At least what I liked about it was something else to kind of give me an awareness that power was out. Here we go. So for the fourth time this winter, we've lost power. Currently on day 4. Definitely a tree limb on the line running to my house. We rent, so I can't do a whole lot. 3,600-watt generator powering up a room via 2 extension cords. Great. That's better than most people. One cord runs a 550-watt solar gen. Excellent. Again, storing that power while it's running. The solar generator is charging phones, tablets, powering up the 5G home internet, a TV, a 12-volt fridge freezer. I'm rotating freezer packs into a cooler full of fridge stuff. I also have a 12-volt propane on-demand water heater shower that pulls water from a 5-gallon bucket. I plug the tub and I use the gray water to flush the toilet. This dude has it down. I'm excited. Just showed out there as B-Man Jay. We saw each other last weekend. It was great to see you, brother. Basically, I'm running the generator to charge up the solar generator in the AM, making food, induction cooktop, very cool, charge batteries, and run a space heater to warm up the powered room. Take a Jenny break during the day. Solar generator keeps things alive and going without issue. Refire the Jenny in the evening to heat and top off charging, cook, took a shower, and then knock off the Jenny before bed. That is a great system. This is like, you know, when Stephen Harris, for those who know him, he used to go on the expert council back in the day, he always talked about using, what did he call it? It was a submarine method, silent and quiet. And so run your generator during the day, power up your battery banks during the day and then draw off those batteries at night. Well, the solar generators have made that game way easier. And this is a simpler version, or a more mobile version, of using a inverter hooked to your vehicle, all of which I love. All right, so biggest weakness is water. Got plenty of drinking water, but toilet flushing and shower water has been a pain in the ass. Been melting snow and packed buckets in the sun at my kitchen door. Anyway, seriously glad of what I cobbled together, taking suggestions on my water problem. Think I might buy one of those 30 to 50 gallon water bladders on Amazon, but that's a lot of water, a lot of weight. Yes, it is. But I just want to say to Stupid Dog Face, what a great name. I love it. And their tagline is Prepping for Tuesday, that they did a great job. I'm just going to share a couple of comments from the community here, but I love sharing some of these stories from our preppers. Get Ready Now says, lost power for 2 days, no generator yet, but working on my husband. We put our perishables in a marine cooler we picked up at a yard sale for $1 a few years ago, pack snow in a Ziploc bags and place them on top of the food because cold goes down. On the second day, temps got into the 40s, but we got power back and opened the cooler. The snow was completely intact with no melting. Another win. I love it. This one here from Gromer says, I recommend a dual fuel generator. We lost it recently too, and I got caught somewhat by surprise. However, between the grill on the propane tank and half a can of gas, I was styling. Love it. And if two's good, three's even better. I love my tri-fuel generator. And then this one here from Bio Bennett. Honestly, as a renter, I always feel super limited in what I could do. Having a mutual agreement with a friend across town, I like this, I hadn't really thought of this, but that if something like an extended power outage happened, we could crash on the couch for a while, is a much easier answer than trying to plan for extended outages. I want to clarify, I'm not saying you can't prep while renting, just that it has some serious limiting boundaries versus owning. I'd recommend mutual support aid for a lot of people renting and saving your money for future purchases after the basics are covered. If you're planning to forever rent, then that's fine, but I don't have a lot of good advice for those folks. Well, there you go. I love this person. I think this person isn't quite looking at it right. There are so many things you can do as a renter. I brought on Diane, the apartment prepper, a few years ago, and she did a great episode on it. Maybe it's time I do another episode on small space and apartment prepping, because the thing that I think has changed the game for apartment preppers is solar generators with solar panels. Love it. And Chase Peoples, there is the an incredible young entrepreneur. What a great dude. And he has an awesome dad too. And hey, Carrie Brown, I'm actually at Uncle Ted's cabin at the moment. Carrie says, hey, good buddy, it's great to see you too. And Rachel Brown says, if he has snow to melt for water, why isn't he using that to keep his food cold? That's what we did. So that was what a lot of people asked in the comments. I read through the whole section. And he basically said that there was a lot of wild animals, blah, blah, blah. And they were really concerned about it. So they were locking up their food. He had a whole lot of reasons. It was his own personal reason for it. Did I agree? Not necessarily. Holy cow, look at that. Farmer's Kind of Life, Amy Dingman, good to see you in here. Heidi Ho, Tim, it's good to see you. A lot of old but new faces in here. Love to see you guys. All right, so next segment for you guys is This Week in the Workshop. And this is where we take a look at the things I've accomplished this week. And there's two reasons for that. Hopefully one to inspire you, but number two, to keep myself accountable. And this week it's important because I'm at Delinquent's Gully, sitting in a cabin in the woods. And before I came live on here, I knocked out the floor, knocked out, put up, knocked down, whatever you want to call it. I framed up the floor to the next 8x8, or actually 16. Oh my God, Tim, what a night. 12x8 section. And that includes a 4x8 deck on the front of it. It's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to knock this wall out, and I'll officially have extra space. So one can be a bedroom and one can be a living room for the time being. Because right now, this little cabin, what you see, I can almost touch both sides. Beds behind me, tables here. I did build a shelf up here today for food. So anyway, here we go. This week in the workshop. Oh, and hold on, I got to go back. Amy says, Heidi ho, Tim. Yes. Neighbor Wilson from the other side of the fence. That was a good one, Amy. I almost missed it. But Rachel said, I heard Heidi Ho and thought of Mr. Hank. Oh, I was thinking of Wilson on the other side. All right. So The girls, one cool thing. So I did a lot in the last couple weeks, but we're going to just talk about the highlights. The girls finally got out to see Delinquents Gully. We didn't get them here for as long as I would like, but Alice absolutely fell in love with it. Charlotte, not so much the outdoorsy girl, not a big deal. She would tell you that. She told you that on the live stream the other day. But Alice, the coolest thing I think I've ever heard her say, she's like, Dad, I want to live in a cabin in the woods. And she means it. She wants to buy some property in Nova Scotia. She goes back there and visits, and every year she wants to stay longer. She wants to move back to the East Coast. I can't begrudge her of that. So I told her, when she's ready, if she wants to, we'll buy some land out there and I'll help her build a cabin. But to me, that just made my day. But we had a hell of a time at Self-Reliance Festival. If you haven't heard about it, you can watch the two episodes I did, one with Becky and one with Becky and the girls. We had a hell of a time for it. Anyway, great. I got three interviews in the can for Patreon. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. One of them actually will probably come on. Well, we'll talk about it. But I did a new interview with Mike Shelby. I did a one with Sonny Pizzakis, who was awesome, and I got Nick Ferguson to sit down with me. All three great interviews. I can't wait. Mike Shelby's will actually probably end up on the YouTube channel at some point because I just released his Prepper Camp interview on Patreon. Nick Ferguson was awesome, and Sonny, wow, one of the best interviews I think I've ever had. Just awesome. Hey, let me pop back to the comments here before we keep going. Caleb says, I want to buy a military truck and mount a sea can to the back and convert it into a living quarters with a roadside barbecue built into it. Dude, that sounds like a lot of fun. That is the type of content you should turn into a, well, I'm always talking about content, but you could turn it into a YouTube channel, but I would just love to see it and the end result. So Rachel says, I have some cool kids. I do have some pretty damn cool kids. And you know, I don't talk about my adult kids quite as much because, I mean, they're still around, but they're not in the house. But I got to tell you, while I was gone, they did some awesome stuff. My son, he lives in one of our rentals. He kind of oversaw, he was taking charge of the renovation project that's happening there. That was huge. And my daughter, Olivia, and her husband, basically, Curtis, they kept the fort down. Awesome. I love them. They ran the business. Curtis took care of the property management for me. And it is awesome having them back in our town. But anyway, you know, a dad could talk about his kids all night, and I already miss them. I miss Charlotte and Alice. We've been talking a few times already, but I did a walk around video at Self-Reliance. We talked about that, but everybody really enjoyed it. I did a, no, hold on. Becky did. Well, we both did. I did a presentation, which I believe landed in the podcast feed today, or maybe it was yesterday. I lose track of time when I'm in the sun too much. And so if you want to hear it, go ahead. But Becky absolutely nailed it with the presentation. If you want to hear it, there is a private or an unlisted link listed in the Telegram group. It's the only place where I'm going to share it. And I do believe that Becky gave me permission today to put the audio in the podcast feed. So in a few days, if you want to hear it, it's going to be there. There's reasons we treated it like that. You can read between the lines and figure it out. If you want to know more, I can tell you in the Telegram group. But yeah. Off-Grid Ping says, hey, the kids just made some Canadian Kinder Egg s'mores. Amazing. Oh my God, I've never done that. That sounds really good. And B-Man J says, Becky did great. She really did. I was proud of her. You know what else is really cool? So I get a message yesterday from Becky, and she's like, can you reach out to Bob? It was Bob and Sean and Joel. So my girls met a bunch of other kids roughly their age at Self-Reliance Festival, and they wanted to get each person's Snapchat. And so I just was blown away. I was 7 or 8 kids altogether. So who knows? There's the potential for them to all become imaginary internet friends in real life over Snapchat. So I love it. And B-Man J says, Tim just didn't want everyone to see him cry. That's why I sat in the front row so nobody could see me. They were all behind me, so that helped. But yeah, I was really stoked about that. Went by a bookstore the other day. I seen a bunch of books. I saw one book from Angry American and a bunch, all of Bill Forstchen's books in there. So it's always fun to see people that you consider friends and people you've interviewed, see their books on the shelf there. I found 2 new books called Wasteland and Wasteland 2, Stories of the Apocalypse. I didn't buy them, but I downloaded Audible. I bought them on Audible to listen to. And so far, the first one's been really good. And I just missed a nasty bout of hail just after Camden. John says everything's got just little tiny dents in it. And people post pictures. It looked like a middle of the snowstorm on the highway. But the main thing I wanted to talk about in this week in the workshop was an unexpected power outage at the hotel in Nashville. We were on the fourth floor. It didn't last very long, but it was a pretty interesting thought experiment for when it did. I walked the floor during the outage. I got maybe a 1 or 2 minute vertical video of it. So I may share that down the road. Not that it's that big of a deal, but so some of my thoughts from the power outage, because it was funny. A couple of nights before I talked to the girls, I'm like, hey, there was thunder and lightning. If the power goes out, you know, use your cell phone, prop your door open, come over and see us, because they were in the room next to us. Anyway, we had a plan in place, but they were still asleep when the power went out this time. But at this hotel, the phone still worked. The elevators didn't. We were four stories up, which, you know, if a person isn't in the shape to climb some stairs, then you're going to be in hard shape. I walked down to one end, down to the other. The staff had already come through and opened all the fire doors, so that was good. But there was an elderly couple who had just been down for breakfast and hiked it up the four stories or four floors, and they were in rough shape. I mean, I'm not in perfect shape by any means, but I'm in a lot better shape even than I was last October. And so I do take the stairs occasionally when we're at hotels just to make sure that I, you know, just because I can, because it makes you feel better. But whatever I did to my Achilles tendon that I got to get fixed at some point does not help things very much. But Rachel Brown says the pictures with Mel's hole were funny. Yes, that is sitting outside of the composting toilet right at the moment. But so the emergency lights in the hall, it was daytime, but they were so dim. I guess in a pitch black scenario, some light's better than nothing. Now, here's some thoughts. It would get hot really quick in that hotel. And the reason I say that is the power was out for maybe 10 minutes and the temperature in our hotel room became noticeably warmer. It was about 4 degrees above where we had it set when the power came back on. So 10 minutes, it went up 4 degrees. And you know why? Because the windows are screwed shut. You can't open them even if you wanted to. It would get nasty in there really quick. The automatic doors, the ones that open and close based on a sensor, people had to pry them open to open them. I was looking at the hotel across the way from us. Definitely pays to have flashlights. I keep one here. I also have one on my everyday carry on my keychain. We're going to do a review on this one down the road. And there's also one on my phone. So flashlights are deadly important. It would be so dark in those hotels at nighttime. Oh, man. There was a guy a few days before when we were at the hotel. He was in a scooter. He was probably 60 and he was rather infirmed. And he was on the third floor or something. He had a handicap room. But all I could think about was how screwed he would be in a power outage on one of the higher floors in one of those hotels. The electronic door locks still worked. They are battery backup. So not many people, I have never heard of anybody talking about what to do for a power outage in a hotel. So I did, you know, my due diligence, but electronic locks still worked. The hotel did have a training in place. They knew to open the window or the doors, that kind of thing. But another thought was there was a lot of dark crevices for some weirdos to hide in. And I found a study on the internet from 2021, and it said 60% of hotels with 500 rooms or more have a generator for basic use, like elevators and that sort of thing. So you have a much better chance of a hotel having a generator if it's over 500 rooms. But the vast majority of hotels in the U.S. do not have a generator. So don't expect it. The power goes out, you ain't using an elevator. Just food for thought. So there you go. All right. Next, we have for you guys.
It's the apocalypse, end of days, the judgment day, the end of the world, my friend.
Let's dig into the community mailbag.
So we got the community mailbag for you. This is where I dip into the mail you guys have sent me over the last couple of weeks and make some comments on it. But this one here, I got a note on Fountain. Hadn't had any real good ones over there in a little while, but this one just made me smile. It's from Jen in Indy. thank you for listening, Jen. But she said, you killed it at SRF. Thank you. That means the world to me. This one came on YouTube from a Bridget Rose. And Harbor Freight, you guys know that I have a thing for Harbor Freight. And this was my video on the difference between an inverter and a standard generator. And Bridget says, that's awesome and a great way to explain the difference. I'm a supervisor at Harbor Freight Tools, and you made it so much easier for me to explain the difference to customers. If only that was a Waffle House employee. Yeah, you guys know what I'm talking about. All right. R. Weiland says, as a Canadian who lived in Southeast North Carolina for a decade, 28 Celsius is still stew weather for Southerners. Yep. 28 is what, like high 70s? Yeah, it gets, I just had to laugh. I was like, for Southerners, that's still kind of winter weather. Also said, I wish I could have went to Self-Reliance Festival. It looks like a lot of fun. I will be getting to Mountain Readiness in North Carolina, planning to catch your presentation. So if anybody's going to Mountain Readiness, I'm stoked. It's my first time going there. Always love going to North Carolina. This will be in Harmony. And I'm speaking twice. I'm doing my preparedness presentation. And I believe it's first thing Friday morning and then mid-afternoon on Saturday. So it's going to be great. Next, this one came from Jason Elliott. And this was talking about Southern food. But he said, it's been ages since I ate at Casey Jones. If you want good catfish, Billy Ray's in Tulsa is hard to beat. Well, I've fallen in love with catfish, guys. And I went to I was in Savannah today and for lunch, and there was this lunch buffet place. And I went in and they had catfish there. And it was great as well. I had catfish. I'm actually, Becky and I are doing, we're doing long distance low carb again. We're going to do our best with it. And so I went there and I did pretty good. I had green beans, coleslaw, and we had southern fried fish, and then I had unsweetened tea. I've learned to ask for it unsweetened. Anyway, it made me smile. So here, and then I had a whole bunch of comments on the girls' entrepreneurial venture of bringing Canadian candy to the U.S. to sell. Oh, it was a good one. Anyway, so survival and preparedness on Instagram. Oh, actually, let me back up. I posted a picture of me for the panel I did at SRF with Sunny, with Angry American, and with John. And my good buddy, the CEO of Prepper Broadcast Network, James, said, I'm going to start telling people that this picture is my favorite metal band. And I looked at it and I was like, you know, we really did kind of look like a metal band. I'd probably be the bass. You know, what anybody know what they call a guy who follows a band around? The bass player? Yeah. Anyway, there you go. And then the rest here are about the girls selling candy. So I wanted to let you guys know they made about $400 on Canadian candy. So thank you. They used it for all of their goodies and stuff. The preparedness guy said, Canadian candy in the U.S., that's flipping brilliant. I didn't write down the name, but somebody else asked, do you take U.S. dollars or only maple? Oh, Farm Hop Life says, do you take U.S. dollars or only maple syrup? Eric Myers says, sound like Canadian brainwashing to me. And North Star Weld, one of my favorite people on Instagram, said, very clever. My sisters are stateside, California and Washington. They stock up on Smarties, ketchup chips, and a few other items before they head back. If someone shows up peddling such Canadian candies, they would happily pay a premium. Oh, yeah. And also, one more thing. I posted a picture when I was in Nashville of these apocalyptic sodas that I saw. And of course, my good friend Nat, the preparedness guy, he said, the caption on the picture was, some folks would get a kick out of these sodas. And Nat says, it's me. I'm some folks. I'd get a kick out of this. And he told me there's a rest stop outside of Dubai that he saw that was apocalypse themed. Even the bathrooms thought it was the coolest place ever. I got to look that up and share that with you, but I wanted to let you know for sure. And one more piece from the mailbag here. North Star Weld said, I'd really like to hear someday a podcast dedicated to how you purchase land in the U.S. as a Canadian, how long you can remain there at any time and such. Maybe I ought to type up an in-depth email as an expert counsel question. It's getting to the point where, as a Canadian, my bug out location might need to be another country. So I've kind of talked about it a bit in the past. I've got three or four kind of really deep questions that have been sent to me recently. I'm going to have to do an extra show just where I handle some of these questions, but I will go into depth. I know this is kind of a cop-out, but I wanted to share this so that you guys would know I'm working on it. But yeah, short answer is 6 months minus a day you can be here. It makes it much easier for crossing the border when you own land. We bought the land on recommendation from a fellow community member who had also bought land from the same company. And yeah, a few thoughts also is it's a long way from home. So it's really hard to find time to get here to work on it. But having really good friends helps a lot. Let's put it at that. So anyway, there's that. Let's go back to the community here. Caleb says, I want to take the barbecue truck to Self-Reliance Fest next year and be a vendor. My 14-year-old daughter wants to go on the journey too. It's good to see like-minded people. Here's a thought. If you could make the time, you might be able to travel around to 3 or 4 events all kind of in that same month and maybe make a little more money. Just a thought. Rachel says, I love your preparedness presentation. Thanks, Rach. There'll be some minor changes this year, but it'll be about the same. And I'll do a recording. The better quality of the two will definitely get shared. And Spurt says that candy care package got consumed in a hurry. I love it. I love hearing that. And so one more. So I normally do a creator spotlight, but when I release a new interview on Patreon, I've also been putting out a 5-minute brief version of it. It's not a tease. You'll get some real questions, some real answers. But I wanted to, for those who haven't heard the interview, it's a 5-minute clip from Mike Shelby from Forward Observer. I love the dude. We've had a couple of really good conversations. But I want to shout out to Rachel, not Rachel Brown is in here, but Rachel, who just signed up as the newest Patreon this week. Thank you very much for the support. The link is in the description below, but $5 a month and you get an exclusive in-person interview every month, plus some other cool content. But that's neither here nor there. What I really wanted to do was share with you guys this 5-minute interview that I did with Mike Shelby. And yeah, so let's dive in. Here you go, guys. Give me 1 second. We'll get it set up for you. And here you go. Hey, workshop. We got Mike Shelby from Forward Observer. How are you, Mike?
Hey, doing well.
Good. Nice to meet you.
Mike Shelby. I'm a former Intel NCO. Spent a few years in Iraq and Afghanistan. Was a contractor after that. And I started a company called Forward Observer. And we produce intelligence reports.
Nice.
So we have a free and also paid. And I started doing that full time in 2016. And then we also have a training company called Gray Zone Activity.
Okay.
And that's intelligence and security training.
Where did your passion, I mean, obviously you had the history of Intel, but where did your passion come from wanting to share it with,
I've always been kind of an info junkie.
Okay.
Like even in high school, I was like, you know, Bill O'Reilly and Matt Drudge. And
yeah,
I mean, you know, that was then. You know,
no, it's, yeah, I remember Drudge Report in freshman year of high school or in college.
I mean, checking that 27 times a day. I really like the information. I like knowing things about, you know, what was happening. And then I kind of lucked out. I got an Intel MOS in the Army. And then the funny thing is, after I got out, I was so burnt out from deploying.
Sure.
I said, I'm not going to do this anymore. So I was a fly fishing guy for a couple of years.
Okay.
And I said, I'll change the pace. And like, I just had a strong draw back to Intel. I was like, man, I got to go back. I'm not doing it for the government. I'm definitely not going back in the military. And so I started Forward Observer.
There's two ends of the spectrum in prepping and everything. You know, you got the guy who just wants to go live out in the woods and be away from everybody. Mm-hmm. Or you got the guy that watches Alex Jones 24/7 or whomever it happens to be.
Right.
And there's got to be a happy medium. How do you sort out what affects you and what you shouldn't bother listening to?
Yeah, that's a good question. I recommend a 30-60-10 split.
Okay.
So, or 60-30-10, or 60% of, I think 60% of the information you should consume should come from the state and local level.
Okay.
Because ultimately that's what's going to affect you. We go to war with China, you're going to be fighting China, you're going to be fighting the people in your community. Or like, that's who you got to get along with.
Yes.
Right. So that's like the tactical local level. 60% of the information you should consume should come from the local. 30% from like the state or regional, and then 10% national or global.
Okay.
And because you've got your sphere of influence and your sphere of concern, and getting hung up an axle, what's going on in Beijing or Moscow or Kiev or whatever, you can't do anything about it. You can't influence the situation.
Right.
So that's why I say local, local, local.
how do you start building those interactions with other people so that you know people you can trust and you have, you know, Jim at the police station that you can reach out and say, hey, you know, I heard there might be a dealer in the area and I might be in need to aware of. How do you start putting that group together?
Yeah. Well, see, if you lived in the same area for 5, 10, 20, 30 years, it's pretty easy.
Yes, right? Sure.
Talk to your buddies.
Yep.
But we live in such a mobile society that a lot of people, you know, they've lived there for 2 or 3 years and they don't know many people. So, yeah, I would say Neighborhood Watch is a good way to start because it's local. You find the people who are concerned about the same things you're concerned about in the neighborhood. And that's really the fastest way to start. It's just a de facto intelligence sharing network.
Okay.
A neighborhood watch it.
Are you a fan of social engineering?
Yeah, it's
can you elaborate? Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, you really can't be a good human intelligence collector, I don't think, without some social engineering.
Okay.
It's pretexts. So people have motivations as to why they will or will not give you information.
Right.
So maybe trust is one. I don't trust this person. Maybe I'll tell him a little bit, but I'm definitely not telling him everything.
Okay.
Right. So social engineering, you're engineering social pretext. So for instance, let's say that you're really good friends with Tom.
Right.
And you say, hey, yeah, man, I was talking to Tom the other day, you know, about the robbery that happened. And that person says, oh, well, this guy's in good with Tom. Yeah, man, here, I'm going to tell you everything and I don't know Tom. Maybe I don't. I just pretexted it.
Okay.
I had made it seem like I'm really good in with Tom, so that you would be more willing to share information with me that you otherwise would not have shared. I think naivete, playing dumb, like I might be the world's foremost expert on the Iranian nuclear program.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm talking to somebody who I may already know everything this guy knows, but I'm going to assume that he knows something that I don't. I'm not going to say, oh, yeah, I know all about Natanz. Oh, yeah, I know all about this. I'm just going to let him talk and I'll play dumb. And I'm going to ask questions and I'm just going to be interested. And you can also use kind of an ego up approach,
okay,
where it's like, man, you really know a lot about that. I find this stuff fascinating, but I don't know anything about it. I'm just like, that's not what I would actually say, but it's just, you know, an example. I think the average person will probably develop, if you're interested, they will probably develop a desire maybe to help you out.
So I hope you guys, so Mike Shelby is one of the smartest dudes I've ever met. And he is totally into figuring out information and doing a kind of a plan, an information plan for your area. So here's the thing. That's just a taste of it. He's really awesome. But anyway, there's a full, so this video was a 32 minute interview I did with him at Prepper Camp last year in September. So that full thing's on Patreon now. There's also a 25-minute interview with Paul Wheaton, 20-minute interview with Joel Salatin, a 35-minute interview with John Pugliano. But something else that I haven't really kind of excited about this is a project, or I guess there's going to be some stuff coming from the Ford Observer. I think Mike and I are going, I can't say partner, that's not the right word, but I talked to him about using some of the information from Ford Observer. And so he's going to be sending me that going forward. So I'm really looking forward to being able to kind of lean into Mike's interests and intelligence. The dude is awesome. Anyway, I've got another interview with Mike that I just recorded at Self-Reliance Festival. I imagine that one's going to end up in the podcast feed at some point because I really didn't want to double up on people in the Patreon. But either way, Mike is so smart and he does the Ford Observer and he also has some training, but this will be, I don't know how many events we've been together, but he's also going to be at the event we're going to in Harmony, North Carolina. So that's pretty exciting. I can't wait. So anyway, there's your taste of what comes in the Patreon, but I want it to be value. And even the little tease that I give you, I want it to be value. Because like I said, Mike is an awesome dude. All right, guys. So I hope you enjoyed yet another edition of This Week in Prepping. To you from Delinquents Gully, high up on a ridge of Ruby Lane. Anyway, that's just so funny to say. I love it. But either way, I'm happy to be down here. I cannot wait to get a bunch more work done. Brian and Corey are coming by tomorrow for a little while. And Caleb says, I'm hooked. Great to have you. I appreciate you. I try to put together, for the record, when I'm not on a 2-month road trip, this tends to be the Thursday show. which we call this, it's all called Workshop Radio. This tends to be the Thursday show. Sunday tends to be interviews, and then I will fit in other shows as I can. But I love doing them. I love sharing my passion for prepping, entrepreneurship, self-reliance with you guys, and I love learning from you as well. So anyway, guys, it's great to have you. I'm going to have a little, I'm going to make supper late. I'm going to chat with the wife, and I'm going to enjoy the quiet of the woods for the next little while until I call it a night. So as always, stay happy, stay healthy, and have a great week.
This is the Chrono Rat Alert.